have a theory. Because a lot of the epic heroes, they never experience childhood, right? They just go straight into adulthood. Is that why they don't have issues? Because they don't have childhood drama.
Yeah.
They've never needed therapy. No.
They never had to heal their inner child because they were never a child. Was he handsome?
How about a young Richard Gomez?
Ooh, I like it. He leaves the girl he already got.
He just married his wife. They're not home yet. They are not. They are not home yet, ladies.
Boys.
Ladies and gentlemen, they are not yet at their home. A few days later.
God, Jesus, keep it in your bahag.
Hello.
Hi.
And welcome to another episode of The Gods Must Be Crazy. This is a podcast on Philippine mythology and folklore, and we're your hosts. I'm Ice.
I'm Anima.
And today, I already told Anima what this is going to be about, but today we are going to cap off the multi-part special on...
The anthology.
On the Binokot, or the kept maidens of Panay Visayan tradition. And I really wanted to save this for last because, number one, it features one of the most well-known epics, sorry, the longest epic as well of the Visayan tradition.
Is this the one that was like recorded over like 4 days or something like that?
Over like... month even, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Because the old lady was like...
I'll tell you the story of how it was recorded. And there are two versions of it. So I already told Anima as well that this is definitely gonna end up being more than one part.
Okay.
So just get ready.
Brace ourselves.
But I like it because... I think this is another one of those things where... We talked about the Binokot, right? The kept maidens and the experience of like... being secluded from society, being kept like rare and precious.
As a treasure, my precious.
And what that could do to the psyche of a person, right? And I think there's a really good version of the stories that does hint a bit at what would a person who, you know, is on the other side, on the receiving end of like being chased after this by this hero. And does she want this attention or not? And what does she do about it?
Interesting. So it's like what it is like on the other side of being pursued. Yeah. Does she like it? Does she... Do they like it?
But the thing is, the epics hardly say, right?
True. And this has a perspective from
and,
the other side.
And it's not like the epics always give the POV of the maidens. But, okay, so we'll go through we'll go through it.
We should write it. You know how there's this whole series of books of like, there's this movie about the ugly sister, like Cinderella's ugly sister.
I have it, Gregory Maguire.
Oh, yeah.
And then Confessions of an Ugly Stepsister.
Yes, and I think Melanie Linsky, okay, I'm confusing it, because Melanie Linsky was the ugly stepsister in Ever After. But there was
I love her.
I love her so much.
Anyway, sorry, this is sidebar.
We should write the other side of
the
story.
We got distracted by Melanie
Linsky.
Okay. So, first thing, I have a lot of notes.
Your beautiful notebook.
I have notes in a notebook. I have notes in my
laptop. Highlighting.
And I have
notes
in my iPad.
Okay.
So, first, I'm going to talk about the journey of how this epic was recorded.
Okay.
Right? And I think I touched a bit on it when we talked about the Binokot. Because this was recorded by one of the few remaining Binokot from Panay, who was also a babaylan.
I kind of really love it that the people who tell the story are kind of part of the story. It's kind of like, you know, if a football quarterback from the past is also telling the story, but it was him, it was his, it's like Big Fish, you know what I mean? And so I would like to think that the depiction of the Binokot it can go either way, right? That it could be like she's making the binokot in the story much more valuable.
Yeah.
And who's to know?
There was a telenovela in GMA called Amaya, which the hero was played by
Marian Rivera
was a binokot. Yeah, and one of the other characters, Glyza, I think she's also a binokot. She became a warrior.
Nice.
By Lanheader Village, something like that. Okay, so let's talk about the Hinalawad, right? And when I talk about the Hinalawad, there are two kind of main versions of it that were recorded by Eflanda Hokano.
Yes.
But that said, there were many, many, many versions of it, right? Mm-hmm. Around the area, right? But these were the main ones that he recorded. And there are two kind of main veins of it. One of it is a story that features the three brothers of Panay. Right? Labaw Dongon, Humadapno, etc. And then there's another version that is...
What is it like about three brothers in a lot of... many stories, right?
And then the other one is focused on Humadapno himself and his adventures.
Okay.
And I loved it because there were so many aspects of it that they were very like Odyssey...
Oh, Iliad.
Circe and stuff that.
Seriously, people turn into pigs?
No, we'll go there. We'll get there. Okay.
Super teaser.
I know. Siyempre, I have to keep you like engaged because it's lunchtime and we're hungry. So, so the Hinalawad is the longest epic poem found among the Sulod.
Okay.
Or they're called the Sulodnon, and it's an indigenous group of people in the interior mountains of central Panay.
Do they still exist today?
They still exist today. Wow. And as of 2010, according to the census, there are around 81,000.
Okay. I was really worried that it was like there were 81. And I'm like, no! 81,000
Sulodnon people.
Nice.
And the interesting thing about them is we know that Panay was one of the main islands that were first kind of invaded by the Spanish, right? During Spanish rule. And there are a lot of indigenous groups in the Panay Island, but eventually they got Hispanicized, except for the Sulodnon people. So it says that they were really the ones who were able to keep a lot of pre-Hispanic, pre-colonial traditions because of where they are, and it links to their name.
Ooh.
So the word Sulod is similar to the word silid.
Oh.
Silid meaning
room.
Room.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
but a place to keep things also.
I even drew a map.
On
my notebook. So the island of Panay is kind of like, think of like an inverted triangle. That's what it looks like. And the provinces of Antique, Aklan, Capiz, and Iloilo are in that island. It's on the western Visayas front.
Yes.
But really, if you look at the Philippine map, it's pretty much in smack dab the middle.
In the middle.
Of the archipelago.
It's like in the heart of... If some people imagine the Philippines as like a person, with like, or like an old man with a cane, and Panay is in the heart area.
Yeah. So, they are surrounded by mountains on all sides.
Wow.
So in the north, they're surrounded by the
I wonder if Yaya is a Sulodnon.
You should ask her.
Because she's from Roja City in Iloilo. And
did she live in the mountains?
Her mom and her dad still live in the mountains. Yeah.
What if? So they're surrounded on the north by the Tagangking Siya Mountain Range, on the east by the Agburi Mayuki Takayan Range, on the south by the Igapuntigaylo Ranges, and the west by Mount Baloy. So literally, they don't even have a specific area between. So it's not like they
specifically
in any of the specific regions of Aklan or Antique or Panay or Capiz. It's kind of a mix of both because it's smack in the middle. And if you look at their location, it kind of is kind of a valley, but not really because they're still elevated. But yeah, they're surrounded on all sides. And I think that part of it led to their isolation, for better or worse, right? They were able to keep a lot of their traditions. And when Eflanda Hokano went there and he interviewed them, so he went there in 1955.
Okay.
He did his recording from 55 to 57. He sat on it for 45 years. It was only published in 1999. That's crazy.
Really? Yes. That's why I don't know it from school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because by the time that went out, I was in college.
And before then, only like hardcore Philippine literature scholars really knew or heard about it. And people only...
Oh, I kind of like that I'm knowing that kids now in the Philippines have new epics to learn.
And people only really started visiting the Sulod and doing research on Hinilawad after... You know, he shared a lot of his learnings. You know, NCPU is where he started because he studied there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he recorded it because it was his hometown. It was his home island. He wasn't from Sulod, but, you know, he's from Panay.
He's Ilonggo.
Yeah. Oh. So I thought that's amazing.
That's so cool. I wonder why he didn't.
And remember we talked about the fact that, you know, he went to visit all of these old,
ladies,
chanters, the last few people who remember the chants. If he hadn't done that,
it'd just be gone.
So this story came from the Sulodnon, right?
Okay.
And I didn't know this about the word, but like apparently people from the lowland villages, so people who lived like below the mountain or in the lower sectors of the mountain, used to call them, so the mountain dwellers, as Bukidnon. Because they came from the Bukid. And it's actually a derogatory term to call
them people in the plains?
No, it's from people. So people in the mountains used to call the mountain dwellers Bukidnon.
The people from the plains
used
to call the people in the mountains Bukidnon.
And it's and some of them don't like it because they feel like it's a derogatory term.
It is. Because in Batangas, we're from the Bundok.
Mm.
And so, or we would go visit our relatives in the city, they would say, Aba, yung mga taga-bundok.
Exactly.
Lumayan.
So, that's the same vibe.
Lumawas. And, you know, it's like as if we were backwards.
Exactly. And, you know, obviously, so they don't like it when people use that word to describe them, which is completely fair. But yeah, so Sulod, the reason they're called Sulod is because in the place that they're living in, they are surrounded or enclosed by the tall mountains, which form like natural walls around their area. And we can talk a bit more about the Sulod tradition because I found some more stuff about them. But at least for the purposes of this, let's just talk about, so what happened? How did Eflan the Hokano record the Hinilawad? So at first, he recorded one part of it, which was the Labaw Dongbon.
The first episode. One of the brothers.
Yeah, yes. Like an episode of it.
The episode.
And the chanter's name was Ulang Udig.
Ulang Udig. I remember this.
Ulang Udig, yes. And he called the story the Hinilawad, which means tales from the mouth of the Halawad River.
Ooh, from the mouth of the river.
Yes.
But also from the mouth of someone.
Yeah. And so this one is very short. He did 2 recording sessions with the chanter. But he said he only knew the only part that he could remember he knew were the adventures of Labaw Dongon.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that they were part of a longer story, but he couldn't remember the rest of the story.
The chanter couldn't remember
the chanter,
rest.
Ulang
Udig. Okay.
Ulang Udig, yeah.
Was a man. Okay.
So, he said he learned it from his aunt, who was the babaylan from the mountain of Lambunao. So, he referred, for the purposes of the rest of the narrative, we'll call him FLJ.
Okay.
Eflan
the Hokano.
So, he referred FLJ. By the way,
for those of you who didn't go to school in the Philippines, Eflan the Hokano wrote all of our textbooks. Like all of our textbooks in grade school but the sociology ones, some of the history ones.
No, he's more of an anthropologist.
Anthropology, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot more of like societal stuff.
The different
early
tribes.
Literature.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he lived with these people.
Yes.
So he was referred to Udungan, who was Ulang Uding's aunt, who had moved to the interior hills at the headwaters of the Panay River in Capiz.
Headwaters.
Yeah, the headwaters is...
This is evoking a lot of like...
Yeah, like the...
Like geography for
very
me.
Very evocative literature. So, the Panay Island, the longest river is called the Panay River.
Mm-hmm.
And the mouth of it is up the north of the island near between Capiz and Aklan. I think it's at Capiz itself. And it flows almost all the way to the mountains. And there are what you call tributary rivers, which basically...
Contribute into it.
So when you say it's at the headwaters, it's like at where that river is starting to feed into the Panay River.
Oh, that's okay.
It means. So anyway,
geography.
So Udungan knew the story of Humadap noon, but she could only chant parts of it because her memory was no longer good. Because
she's 100 years old!
Exactly. So, she then referred FLJ to her niece.
Okay.
Hugan-an.
Hugan-an.
So, he actually went this whole journey to look for Hugan-an. He had to hire... He was accompanied by one of the local hunters. Called Nong Kalo from Tapas.
I thought he was accompanied by a magical donkey.
Actually, this feels very...
It's epic itself.
It's very Indiana Jones looks for the long lost epic, you know?
And he was accompanied by Short Round, who later on won an Oscar.
So, Hugan-an was one of the most well-known practicing babaylan. And most of the old mountain folk knew about the story, but they agreed that actually... Only Hugan-an could chant the full thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so FLJ was accompanied by a hunter. It took them a week to reach Taganghin Siya, which was the place where she was living. And then 1 week of asking around where she was because they did not know where she was.
And I bet the directions were like, and this is as a someone who's tagabundok.
Yeah.
The directions my dad used to give me were like,
dun sa puno.
He'd go like, dire-diretso kayo, tapos dun sa mangga, you turn left. I'm like, do you think I know what a mango tree looks like? What does it look like? Yung mangga!
Imagine if you said, dun sa pangatlong mangga, at the third mango tree, you turn right. So, but not before the third mango tree.
Buti if that's the direction. But the directions in Tagalog are usually like, pag nakita mo yung mangga, kumanan ka. But what if I have really good eyesight?
Yeah, and you see the mango tree.
And
right
I see it right
before.
There, and there's like 3 more streets that I can turn into before going there.
Oh, that's so funny.
And then my dad goes like, tas paakyat yung kalye, you know you're on the right track. Pag paakyat yung kalye ng konti ng mga ano, psycho, how long should I expect to be climbing up? And my dad goes, mga isang stick ng sigarilyo. What? What is this metric? Number one, I'm 8. I don't smoke. And like, is it 5 minutes? Is it 10 minutes? Is it 20?
Also, some people smoke really fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Some
Again,
people smoke slow.
8 years old.
Okay. Let's move on so that we can get to the story.
Okay.
And so I kept this part because I thought you would really find it interesting.
Okay.
Because it talks about like her... The practice of the babaylan and the fact that these epics are sacred to the peoples, right?
Yes.
So, he was lucky because the hunter that he was traveling with was very well known in the area.
Okay.
Because the hunter, so Nongkalo, lived in Tapas, which is, I think, lower from the mountain. So, actually, a lot of the people from that town, when they would go down to the market to buy stuff, they stayed overnight in Nongkalo's house.
Oh!
So they knew and trusted him, which is helpful later on because he asked for help to look for Hugan-an.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them nearly a week of Nongkalo going back and forth to Hugan-an and say, oh, come on, are you willing to do it?
Uh-huh.
You know, he just wants to record it, etc. And eventually Hugan-an said that, you need to perform a ritual so that I can tell you the story.
What is the ritual?
So, they needed to perform a bugay, which is a ritual of permission, so she could chant the story freely in a relaxed manner even during the day because the hinilawad could only be chanted at night.
What?
And there were many passages and parts of the hinilawad, and I actually read some of the translated texts where literally, the quote is like, oh, spirits, if you're really powerful, can you do this for me? So she needed permission to even say some of those words without actually calling the spirit.
Yeah. I'm just pretending.
Exactly. So the paniwata had to be performed.
Paniwata.
And which is similar to pag-anito.
Yes.
Right?
Or panata.
Exactly. And it was done when the baylan, so they call the babaylan, baylan. had to do a difficult right, like when another Bailan was seriously ill. So it was that level.
Oh my
Of, you know, they had to offer one black pig, 7 red roosters, and 7 gray hens. It was very specific, just to get permission to say it. And you know, it struck FLJ that yeah, this isn't just a literary text; it's literally a part of their religious rites.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can't just say it willy nilly.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And what's this? It was only after the ritual that FLJ actually found out Hugan An's name was Hugan An. So before that, she was introduced as Iyai Inar, and the people in the settlement called her by that name, but he knew that they were only using that name.
That was not her true
name. In front
name.
Of him, because he was an outsider.
Yeah.
And then,
because the power of the name.
Yeah. And then when he eventually confronted her, because he lived with her family for a month so he could record, he was like, why didn't you tell me your real name? And then he wrote this text. He was like, when confronted, she gave an impish smile and said, well, I didn't know you then, did I?
It's true.
And I love the sass.
She's so sassy.
So
is Huganan, I know she's the niece of...
She was a binokot. And
so like, how old was she? Was she like 70s?
Probably
60s. 60s, right?
70s. So her memory was still pretty intact.
Yeah.
And
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm 42 and my memory is shit.
Yeah, but you didn't have to keep repeating all of these things
true.
By rote.
I mean, I still know every line of Wannabe.
Yeah.
So if that's the epic you want me to chant,
that's true.
I can totally do.
So apparently, so the version that we have today, even though it's the longest recording, and again, it took them like weeks of recording it, because at first Eflan the Hokanda stayed there for a month, mm-hmm. and he was trying to record, but he was having such a hard time because she was chanting pretty fast, and he was getting confused with like the sequence of events. So eventually, he had to go away and then come back. They had to hire helpers to bring the recording equipment across the river.
So wait, the first time he went, he didn't have a recorder with him.
Yeah, he was recording it by hand. He was like
writing
down.
Oh, he was
down,
like writing it?
I believe so. He was writing down the local, in the Sulod language, of course. And she was chanting too fast for him to write.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, in a month, right? Yeah. That's why he had to stay for a month. So the next time he came with a recorder. He had like helpers to bring along, and then he had a technician to go with him. It was very intense.
I saw the picture. I remember the picture that you sent.
Yeah, of her recording, right?
Yeah.
The last part I'm going to say before we go to the epic is many parts of the epic story were eliminated completely.
Why?
By Hugan An. She didn't share it because these are sacred and part of healing rituals. So even with the Bugay, I can't freely share it.
Yeah.
And when invoked in secular settings, the chanter could be struck dead. It's called sinda by the spirit for calling them down when no important or appropriate occasion for invoking them.
I mean, I'd be pissed off
of healing rituals.
If it's just like, you so, call me all the way here.
Exactly. Like, what is this?
No one's dying.
It's called
What is this tape recorder?
Exactly. It's called the Tu'au or the Tu'hau, which is a punishment for making fun of the spirits.
I like that.
And he only found that out. So he didn't even know that he didn't have the full thing. He only found that out because, you know, as an anthropologist, he stayed for a long time and lived, and they eventually trusted in him enough to share that with him. Okay. The one last thing. And then during recordings, Hugan An would, at certain parts of the chanting, murmur something. And then on occasion, she would burn kamangyan.
Kamangyan is frankincense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is the native incense before saying a ritual line. Right? Like, things like, come, O spirits, you know, if your powers are trustworthy, etc. So, there's several lines because it's a repetitive, right? It's
epic. Yeah. Like a spill.
Exactly.
I know Kamanyang because there's a song. There's a JMM song.
Mm.
Dalay gintot Kamanyang at Mira para sa'yo, Jesus, Hari ng Sanlibutan. Kamanyang is a lovely word, no?
It is a lovely word.
I like it.
Yeah, I always remember it from church.
So cute.
And then the last one is... So,
I thought when you said she was murmuring something, she was sort of like negating some, you know.
She could have been.
Right? So
she
like,
could also have been. Yeah, she could
she
have
was been. Like, I'm so pretty. Not.
Or she could have been like, spirits don't listen to this part, but come, oh spirits.
Yeah.
Because she was, eventually he realized that she was a Tuyawan Babaylan, who was one of the the one who kept powerful Sarugudon or spirit wards. And so, again, the whole kind of ritual was to free her to deal with outsiders without fear of spiritual sanctions.
I wonder if any of her spirit guides were like really chill with it.
Mm.
You know, like...
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, no, you're gonna be famous.
Imagine if, you know, in Eternals, the Bollywood guy.
Yes.
What if it was that? Like, spirit wanted to show off.
Yeah.
Would just show up Kygo, at, like, random
Kygo. Kygo.
Kygo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Here's the actual story.
Finally. Okay.
Wait, we're at 30 minutes.
It's okay. We have a lot of side quests.
Yes.
So it'll go down to 25 minutes.
Precisely.
All right. So the first story is the three brothers of Panay.
It's really good. This coffee is super nice. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So the first story is the three brothers of Panay.
By the way, Panay is, by the way, such a mythic island because it has this, it has Binokot, but also it also has Biringan, but also it has Kapisen Antique, where all the monsters are. Sikihor.
Yeah.
And amazing desserts.
Because I think a large part of it is they really kept a lot of their ancient literature, so...
Good on you, Panay.
Okay. Shout out to the Panay natives out there.
Shout out! Yaya and Ella!
Alright. Finally,
the story.
Okay. When the goddess Alunsina of the Eastern Sky reached maidenhood, her dad, Kaptan, decided that she would marry.
I know Kaptan.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So Kaptan is the, you know...
Sky god.
He had a daughter called Alunsina of the Eastern Sky. Mm. And again, when she reached maidenhood, he said, okay, now you can marry. And then the gods and lords of the different worlds came to try their luck. But she refused them all. She refused all of the gods and lords of the different worlds in favor of Datu Paobari, who was the mighty ruler of Halawad.
Oh.
Who was mortal.
Was he handsome?
He should have been. He better have been.
Who would he have looked like? Bokuon.
How about a young Richard Gomez?
Ooh, I like it. Okay. You know what? No, this is perfect, right? Because Alunsunod is her name?
Alunsina.
Alunsina, if she was the goddess of the eastern sky, so she was the goddess of the dawn.
Uh-huh.
Dawn silhouette?
Ooh, yeah. Which is very desai. Anyway.
Okay.
So, they got married, but all of the former suitors were so offended.
Yeah.
And so mad and disrespected that they plotted against the newlywed. So, they actually called a council of the gods. Ooh. So, one of the suitors, the lord of the plains, called Makliyom Satwan, called the Council of the Gods, and they agreed that the country of Halawad had to be destroyed.
Oh, no.
And so, they sent a great flood
to
cover the plains.
Okay.
And with the aid of Suklang Malayon, who is the guardian of happy homes, luckily, the couple was able to escape the horrible catastrophe. Mm-hmm. So, it's that whole great flood motif that we see in a lot of...
Gilgamesh, the Bible.
Exactly. A few months after the flood, Datu Paobari and his young bride went to the plains to start their new life.
Mm-hmm.
And they settled again at the mouth of the Halawad River. And eventually, Alunsina got pregnant and she told her husband to prepare for the delivery. And then she gave birth to triplets.
Aww! I wonder how common that was back in the day.
I think they just wanted, like...
It's because it's magic.
Yeah, it's magical, right? Amazing. You have triplets.
Twins are magic.
She summoned the high priest called Bungut Banwa to perform the necessary rites.
What's the word for triplets in ano?
I don't know.
Okay.
To perform the necessary rites to the gods of Madyas for the good health of the children. And then, you know, it talks about the ritual, the, you know, burned incense and they burned alangkinan fronds and stuff like that. And he fumigated the three infants. That was the ritual. When the ceremony was over, the high priest opened the windows of the room, the ones facing the north, and a gust of cold northerly wind blew in.
Oh, no.
And suddenly, what happens in epics with babies?
The babies start talking.
What else?
They become grown.
Yeah. They're completely adults.
Nahanginan.
Yeah.
There's this... Wait, they have to sidebar nahanginan.
What does it mean?
Oh, you know, like... Okay, when newborns come out, they kind of look No. They kind of look like Voldemort's. Prunes, right? Yeah. They look like prunes, blah, blah, blah. And then just a few days later, they are all fluffy and chubby and fat. Right? And then the old people would say, like, anahangina na siya, meaning they got aired out. But I think, this is my hypothesis, I think it's also like, you know when other baby animals, like chicks, come out, they're all like gross.
Molt. When they
molt. When they molt, nahangina na sila.
Interesting.
So it's literally, nahangina sila and they got big.
Similar thing happened to Lamang.
Yes!
Probably even Gilgamesh. I actually forgot Gilgamesh na.
Did Gilgamesh get big?
I think...
We need a sidebar.
Okay, I have Gilgamesh. A theory. Because a lot of the epic heroes, they never experience childhood, right? They just go straight into adulthood.
Uh-huh.
Is that why they don't have issues? Because they don't have childhood drama.
Yeah, they were never like first, second, third born.
They've never needed therapy.
No. They didn't have to. They never had to heal their inner child because they were never a child. So that's what you need to do. So it's very interesting because Gilgamesh is the oldest epic, right? Yes. It's one of the first stories.
I'm barely in like the first.
It's okay. But what if like some of that like Persian Hindu influence got
so
us eventually?
I think there are a lot of motifs, like the whole journey, like long journey and many headed beasts, etc. That they say might have some Hindu influence from like Ramayana.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So there are a lot of motifs like that.
Yeah. Okay. Let us resume the start of this epic.
So the wind blew, and then suddenly the babies, again, they were just born. The babies became three full-grown adults.
Okay.
Now, the eldest of the brothers, a few days after the ceremony, so he's like, call it 5 days old.
Okay.
The eldest of the brothers asked his mom to prepare his magic cape, his hat, his bahag.
Mm-hmm. His loincloth.
His loincloth. And his kampilan, or a fighting bolo. Because he was gonna go to Handog, a place near the mouth of the Halaud River, where a beautiful maiden named Angoy Ginbitinan lived.
Mm-hmm.
So, 5 years old.
Let's call her
old,
Bitida.
5 years old, he's like, I'm gonna go get myself a wife. Okay?
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of that popong.
Me neither.
No, because of what happens next. So, for several days, he traveled across the White Plains, climbed steep mountains and traversed deep valleys until he reached the mouth of the river. And then he asked for the hand of the maiden from... But the father of Angkoy Ginbitinan commanded him, so he gave him a quest. So as part of his dowry, or pamamanhikan...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Courtship.
Courtship. The dad said, okay, you have first to defeat this huge monster called Manalintad, which haunted the mountainside of Halawon.
Very Hercules-y.
So we talked in previous episodes about part of the courtship ritual, aside from the man giving a dowry to the wife's family, he had to perform acts of service, basically.
Yes, yes.
Or he had to labor in the family's fields for like 1 year, 2 years before
or you
he
have
could
to, like,
marry.
Fetch the water
before he could marry the girl and consummate the marriage. So this is very much a part of the tradition.
Yeah.
And again, all of the maidens here. Sorry, I should have led with that. All of the maidens here were binukot.
Oh,
and because again, the binukot tradition was a very, very big
was
part.
The end all and be all.
It was a
Panay.
Very big part of the Sulugnon, specifically the Sulugnon culture. So a lot of the surviving pots were from Sulod. So
again, so it's not a plains habit. It's
so this whole like what's this? The big context of all of these epics is that because they were from that tradition that had been caught, you know, a lot of the... That's why there's always, like, these prize maidens, etc. Because they are these kept maidens. And in the second story we're going to talk about, it kind of goes a bit overboard. So anyway, he had the magic belt, which he used to kill the monster. And then he cut off the tail and brought it back to the people of Karimlagan as a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually, you know, the father agreed. He brought home his new bride. However, on the way home to Madyaas, they met a group of young men who told Lamal Dongon that they were going to Tarambang Burok to try their luck to earn the hand of Abyang Durunuun,
another lady,
beautiful sister of Sumpoy, Lord of the Underworld. So,
like a Hades character.
And what does Lambao Dongon decide?
He leaves the girl he already got.
He just married his wife. They're not home yet. They are not. they are not home yet, ladies. Boys. Ladies and gentlemen, they are not yet at their home.
Jesus.
So he goes home.
But also he's 5 days old.
He goes home. He leaves his wife
with
his mom.
You know my tito did this.
And then immediately proceeded to go make ligaw to this other person.
My tito did this. Like, for real. He married this lady. Sorry, I know some of my cousins listen to this story, but he marries this lady. No, he got this lady pregnant. They go to his mother's house, my grandmother's house. She has a baby. He goes off and marries another lady who's now his wife and has, like, two more kids. Now, the kid from the first lady is now, like, part of the family, like, 30 years later, but he totally did
I don't
that.
Think he's as bad as Labo Dongon.
I don't think
as
that.
You will see.
Also.
So they arrived home. He left his wife with his mother's care and immediately left.
Did he say what he was gonna leave for?
I mean, she knew. He decided, like, he heard the story and then he was like,
me too. I'm gonna go for that. So, but also, my question is, does the tradition allow for multiple wives?
Yeah.
Because, okay.
So on his way, he encountered a huge man with 100 arms called Sikai Padalogdog, who guarded the ridge leading to Abiyang Durunun's place. And they had a huge fight. And it's interesting because
I'm just wondering, like, where do they go? Where do they all go?
I know, it's 100, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting because they talked about how the agimat mm-hmm. of Labo Dongon was stronger than Padalogdog's anting-anting. So it was both about their actual prowess in fighting, but also the
power of their talismans.
The power of their talismans and who was more favored by the spirit. Yeah. So eventually, he surrendered. Sikai Padalogdog surrendered to Labo Dongon. Mm-hmm. So Labo Dongon was again very successful. He was granted the hand of this new maiden.
So that was a trial. The guy, the big guy with the arms.
He was like guarding the ridge that led to her home before he could go court her. So he defeated the 100 armed monster, surrendered to him, and then he was successful in his courtship, right? So he went back home with his second wife, Abiyang Durunoon. A few days later,
God, Jesus, keep it in your bahag.
Like, he again set forth for Gadlum to win the hand of another maiden.
Jesus.
This is even worse. The name of the maiden is Malitong Yawa Sinagmaling Diwata.
Oh, I know who she is.
Who was?
I know her.
Who was the young bride of Saragnayan, Lord of the Darkness.
No!
She is a married lady.
A married goddess.
A married goddess. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Jesus Christ.
So he rode his Biday Nga Inagta, which is a black boat. He sailed across the seas for many moons, then across the region of the clouds, passing the land of stones, until he reached the shore of Tulog Matian, which is Saragnayan's seaside fortress. Mm. And as soon as he got there, he challenged Saragnayan. Saragnayan is like, who are you? And why are you here?
You look like a guy with already two wives.
I am peacefully living here. And he was like, I am Labo Dongon, son of Dato Paobari, and the goddess Alonsina of Analawod. And I came here for the fair Malitong Yawa Sinagmaling Diwata.
Ang haba ng name.
I know. And
I'm here for Ana Maria Antonio Di Mapilisore.
And then Saragnayan just laughed at him. And he told Labo Dongon that he was courting trouble because that's my wife.
Yeah.
You're coming here to get my wife.
Yeah.
But Labo Dongon still continued to challenge him to a duel and said that whoever wins will have Nagmalitong Yawa.
Okay.
By the way, I did additional research and according to the research, Nagmalitong Yawa loved her husband, Saragnayan.
Jesus.
And did not want to leave.
Yeah.
We'll get that.
Is her choice included in this?
No. Clearly not.
Yeah.
So Saragnayan agreed and they proceeded to fight. Labo Dongon submerged Saragnayan under the water for 7 years.
Okay.
So by this point, he's what? Like a month and 7 years old?
I can hold my breath for like 45 seconds. 7 years is
however,
too long.
When he took Sargnayan out, the Lord of Darkness was as alive and strong as the day that they first met. Because
he's the Lord of Darkness.
Exactly. So, in turn, so when Sargnayan took his turn, he pulled a nearby coconut tree and beat Labo Dongon with its trunk.
Okay.
And Labo Dongon still survived.
This is like the longest fight scene ever.
Yeah. Eventually, he had the pamlang or nanting-nanting. Again, nanting-nanting's feature heavily in the battles here. He defeated, so Sargnayan defeated Labo Dongon and imprisoned him under his house.
Okay.
And this is interesting because if I recall correctly, part of the burial tradition of the Sulod, but this is weird because this is what they do to like respected members of the community is, so usually they just bury people, I think.
Under the house?
But if it's like, let's say, a babaylan or the head of the village, they would kind of like cocoon them and hang them
on
like
a tree.
And then when the body is like
composed,
yeah, decomposed and it's just bones, etc., they get, I don't know if they exhume it, and then they get the bones and then hang it under the house.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's related because that's the practices of the Sulod. Where was I? So
he defeated him.
So Labo Dongon died. And he was defeated and he was imprisoned under the house. Sorry, he didn't die yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, now let's go back to Mount Madyas where the two wives
are. The two other wives are, and also the brothers and the mom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anggoy Gimbitinan bore Labo Dongon a child at about the same time that Abiyang Durunuon also delivered a handsome boy.
Shit, man.
So, the two
they're
children,
brothers, I mean,
the two children were called Asumanga and Abiyang Baranugon.
Okay.
And then a few days after they were born, again, all of them are prodigies here. They decided, so the two brothers, a few days after they were born, I'm supposing that they also became full-grown adults the moment they were born after the ritual. They went forth to look for their father, who they had never seen.
Yeah.
Right? They went to the region of the darkness and they had to fight a three-headed monster called the Tabuknun.
Nice.
And then again, they passed the regions of the clouds and the land of the stones and they reached where Sargnayan lived. And instantly, they demanded that the guy release their father.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sargnayan taunted them. And then he taunted Baranugun and he said, You. This is actually really funny, though. He said, your umbilical cord has not yet even been removed. And you're threatening me.
It might be true.
And he said, you should still go home to your mother.
Snap.
And so he was so insulted that he challenged Sargnayan to a duel. And thinking that it was a joke, Sargnayan accepted the challenge. And then it turned out Baranugan was stronger than him.
Ooh.
So they defeated him and they brought home their father. And Labo Dongon's defeat angered his brothers.
Okay.
So these are the brothers, right? So Humadapnon,
mm-hmm.
who's the second or third brother, Humadapnon is the second brother, swore to the gods of Mount Madyas that he would go after Sargnayan's kinsmen and followers.
Okay.
Like in revenge. So he, you know, took with him enough provisions and he passed by for Buyong Matanayon. So he was like, I need an assistant going
okay.
into the battle. So,
he
picked up the skillful swordsman from Mount Mateula. And together they sailed for Sargnayan's land. One thing I found interesting in some of these epic stories is, especially Humadapdon for some reason, he's always like, wait, I need a sidekick. I can't go by myself. I need a sidekick. Because there's another Humadapdon story where he creates a sidekick.
Maybe he's like an extrovert and he doesn't like being alone.
That's fair. That's you.
Right?
That's
me. I always like having a friend.
You're like, wait, we need to swing by for my friend. She's really good at swords. Yeah.
Really good at swords. Labo.
Where was I?
They stopped by with the and picked up his buddy.
Yeah.
Like, shotgun, get in, loser.
Yeah. So this is a part of the story that kind of sounds similar to the other version. But they rode in a sailboat. And they traveled across the region of the clouds, past the land of darkness, and they arrived at a certain place called Tarambang Burirao. Mm-hmm. And they encountered Pinganun, a seductive sorceress
like
of the
Lagas
Kutingtang Ridge. And when she saw Humadapnon and his friend,
By the way, Humadap Nun is single, right? Because single. He doesn't have like 15 wives.
He hasn't gone on the search for the wife yet.
Okay.
Seeing Humadap Nun and his friend, Pinganun changed herself to a beautiful maiden and with quote-unquote, all the known wiles of a woman, lured the young man to make love to her.
What does that mean?
And when night came, to sleep with her. I think okay. it's pretty.
Titties.
Humadap Nun fell into the snare and he refused to leave despite the pleas of he became a witch. And for several months they remained. On the seventh month, Buyong Matanayan remembered that they brought along with him a lot of
betel nut.
Ginger.
Ginger!
Magical ginger.
Golden ginger.
So one night while Pinganun and Humadap Nun were eating, Matanayan threw seven slices of ginger into the fire. And as soon as Pinganun smelled the odor, she was like, oh my god, excuse me, I have to go. And then Matanayan knew that witches or sorcerers could not withstand the odor of ginger, which is the antidote to sorcery.
Did I tell you like what Ate did one time? Tegan was.
But can I just say the end of this part? When the girl left, Matanayan like slapped his friend. He was like,
snap out of it!
He became unconscious and he just like took him away. Because he could not trust this guy thinks with his dick. I can't trust him. So.
All these brothers think with their dicks. But I love it. But
did Atis do?
So Tegan one time came home from the park and she was feeling poorly. And she was, and Yaya was like, baka na usog or something. She got the evil eye. And so she got a piece of ginger, like a slice of ginger, and she rubbed it all over Tegan's body. Like all over Tegan's body. And then Tegan threw up. And then right after she threw up, she was perfectly fine.
Love it.
Right? And she was like, baka napansin. But because every time she goes to the playground, everyone is like, oh, she's so cute. Oh, she's so funny.
A song?
In a ballet today, all the other parents were like, Tegan is so funny and so cute. And I was like, what yung patiin? Because, anyways. So maybe there's a ginger bath coming on.
True. Where was I?
He knocked his friend senseless and brought him back.
Yeah.
Onto the
boat. So eventually they went back to their original mission, which was the revenge plan. Right?
I totally already at this point I was like, where were they going?
Why were they traveling?
No, this is why he needs his friend because he has ADHD.
Yeah, exactly.
And he'll totally forget what he was getting. Yeah. Like he's like walking towards the kitchen and he's like,
maybe Matanayan wasn't into like girls. So he was like easily not distracted by all of this.
I mean, hey. It's the Philippines.
So they kept traveling and they kept pursuing and vanquishing Saragnayan's relatives. Finally, they reached a place called Piniling Tubig, which I find...
Chosen Water.
I love that name. It sounds so evocative. So Piniling Tubig. When they reached the gates of the village, they saw a big gathering and they were like, what's going on? Why are so many people here? Apparently, the datu of the region, Umbao Pinaumbao, was giving his daughter's hand in marriage to whoever could remove the huge stone which had rolled into the center of the plaza. So hundreds of men had tried, but they were not able to move the stone. So Humadap Nun was like, yeah,
let me
do this. So he elbowed his way to the front of the crowd.
Like that little girl in the old Zoom video. Remember? In the Bloomberg dad?
Who
had like a Korean kid. She was like,
I can't do this. So, with the aid of his magic cape,
He has a magic cape.
He has a magic cape as well. And so everyone was so amazed. And he lifted it and he threw it back to the mountain.
Ooh.
Ew. So they hailed Humadap Nun as a hero. And Datu Umbao Pinaumbao gave him his daughter. And then these brothers, I swear to God, during their wedding feast, someone was, I think, chanting or telling a story or whatever, and Humadap Nun heard the story about a beautiful girl.
Jesus Christ!
Called Burigadang Pada Sinaklang Bulawan.
Jesus.
Who was a goddess of greed.
Greed.
Goddess of greed.
I love it.
So a court minstrel was telling the story of this lady, and the story, and he was like, "I have to
have that woman.
I have to have her
on my wedding party.
I have to have." What a song into the woods.
I don't know the Into the Woods songs.
What?
I've never actually seen Into the Woods.
It's so good. You have to.
I know.
To.
But at this point, it's also like super, super... It's like The Wire. I still have also not seen The Wire.
But Into the Woods is so fun because like a lot of the songs are really just like...
Is it Sondheim, ba?
Yeah, it's Sondheim. It's like turning the fairy tales around. So, yeah. One of the songs is from like the two princes. So, the Prince of Cinderella and the Prince of Rapunzel.
Okay.
And they're talking about, they're kind of talking about their quest for love. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to one-up each other.
Oh.
And the song is, it's called Agony. Anyway, the point is like, oh my god, she's so unreachable. I can't find her. I can't have her. And they're like, no, mine's more difficult and mine's more unreachable.
I think I've heard this song.
You would have. Chris Pine played it in the Into the Woods
movie. I know.
Where was I? So he was like, I must have her to wife.
Oh my god.
So he went forth to win the hand of the goddess. On his way, by the way, it doesn't say what he did with his wife. I guess he just left her there.
He left her
at the home again. I don't know.
Did they already get married? Because it was wedding feast, so yeah, they were already married.
He literally heard about it in their wedding feast, and then he decided that he was gonna go court this other person. Like, fuck you, man!
How annoying!
If I was that to umbaw pinaumbaw, I'd be so pissed. Anyway. Was I?
But then again, if multiple wives were allowed,
some kind of respect, right? Like there should
some grace period. Like sleep with your wife at least a couple of nights,
yeah,
so that the two babies don't get born on the same
not
day.
Not a couple of nights. Like let's make it like a few months at least. Anyway, yeah. So he went forth to win the hand of goddess. What's her name? Do you remember?
It's too long. She's Burigada, the goddess of greed.
Burigadang pada sinaklang bulawan. Say that 20 times.
Let me see. Brigadang.
Okay. On the way, he met Buyong Makabagting, the mighty son of Datu Balahidyong.
Wait, did he leave his sidekick at the wedding?
Apparently.
Okay.
So this is a new person. He met Makabagting, and Makabagting was also on his way to win the hand of Burigadang Pada Sinaklang Bulawan.
Same girl.
We need to give these women nicknames. Yes. Buri, Pada. Anyway, he challenged Humabdapnon to a duel and accepted, and they fought. He defeated Makabagting, and the latter, knowing that he was no match for Humabdapnon's net and power, promised to give up his suit and help Humabdapnon win the hand of Burigadang Pada.
That's kind of cute.
So they became friends.
Yeah. And but it's also a classic guy thing, right?
Exactly.
So like you're fighting with your buddy, with a guy, yeah, and then you become best friends.
And then the truncated version doesn't really say how he won the hand of Burigadang Pada, but he did. And he brought her home. And then finally, shortly after... So finally,
did he bring his other wife home?
I hope so.
Okay.
He better have. And then finally, the last section of the story is, shortly after Humadapnon left for the Land of Darkness, so this is earlier.
Okay.
Right, in the story. Dumalapdap is their youngest brother. So,
okay.
Labaw Donggon, Humadapnon, and Dumalapdap. The youngest brother also started for Burutlakan Kaadlaw.
Okay.
Where, Lubay Lubyok Hanginon Si Mahyok Hyokon lived. The fact that I'm able to just say them on at
yeah.
least the
Did
second
you practice?
Try. No, I didn't. It's surprising to me.
Can you imagine singing? That's why the songs took so long. Because everyone had 15 goddamn names.
Yeah.
That's why.
But I guess
yuk.
Because I'm guessing, and again, we don't speak Salod and we don't speak Visayan as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the names are like
phonetic
titles as well, yeah, right? So it's not just the name. The reason it's long is because it evokes some part of what
yeah,
you stand
it's probably
for.
It's probably like
the
princess
beauty of the
yeah,
golden
like,
isle, something like that,
like princess so and so who is the daughter of so and so and a
like
maiden
that.
Of the seven waters, yeah, and everything.
So what's her name again, do you remember?
Hyok.
I actually like the same Lubay Lubyok Hanginon Si Mahuyok Hyok. He brought with him Dumasig, the foremost wrestler of Madya. So
he got a third guy.
No, this is Dumasig.
Oh,
the youngest
guy. Okay.
Youngest. But they love their sidekicks.
A wrestler.
Maybe the reason Labaw Donggon got defeated was he didn't bring his sidekick along.
And so this epic is supposed to teach the value of friendship and collaboration.
It's true.
Right? And women.
So they traveled for several months until they reached a place called Tarambuan Kabanwa. Mm-hmm. And there they met Balanakon, a two-headed monster. So many like multi-headed and multi-limbed beings in the stories, which guarded the Kalbangan, which is a narrow ridge leading to the place where Lubaylubyok Hanginon lived.
Lubaylubyok Hanginon.
Hanginon Muhoyokyokon.
Muhoyokyokyok.
I love it. I honestly love her name. So with the aid of his duende.
He has a duende.
And I think the word duende here is less dwarf and more companion spirit.
Okay.
I think it means like abay. I think it means abay or companion spirit. So with the aid of his duende, so the spelling is duende.
Duende.
Killed Balanakon. And as he approached the gate of the place, he was challenged again by someone else. Mm-hmm. This one is called...
You know what? I just had an idea. Epics should be video games.
You know what they should be? They should also be tabletop RPG games.
Yeah.
They should totally be roleplay. Yeah, I'm sure they are. Didn't we read...
So there was a game that that existed before, which was sort of like our predecessor when I was making video games called Anito.
Yeah.
And there were aspects of it because you were a tribal person.
You know, Anima, I think we do a great job in like a tabletop RPG. Of like Philippine mythology.
I think so.
Like a Dungeons and Dragons.
No, I have there's this game called Lagim, which Budget helped me. You should play that.
But I don't know any dungeon masters. You need like a few. You need three or four people.
No, Lagim doesn't need a dungeon master.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. But it's more like Magic the Gathering. Slash Dungeons and Dragons. We'll see.
Anyway, okay. Hey.
Sorry.
If anyone there...
Any Filipino Dungeons and Dragons
There's any GM
master,
there
who... I have not played Dungeons and Dragons since I was like maybe...
I've never played it ever.
Really?
No.
I played it a few times.
Seems fun.
I was like 12, 11.
Seems fun. Yeah. Okay. So, with the aid of his duende, he killed Balanakon. When he approached the gate of the palace, he was again challenged by, this time, a bat-like monster.
Batman!
Sharp, poisonous claws called Uyutang. Close!
Man-Bat.
Uyutang.
Do you know that there's a comic book character called Man-Bat?
That's good.
And his name is Wayne Bruce.
I love it.
And he's like...
So, so a bloody duel ensued. Mm-hmm. They fought for 7 months. During which neither of them seemed to have advantage over the other.
Is 7 a magical number in Filipino
I think
mythology?
So. 7, 5, 3. Mm. On the last month, Dumalapdap took hold of Uyutang's ankle, broke it, and with one deadly stroke from his magic dagger, he hit Uyutang beneath the armpit. So I guess a soft like...
Under the ribs,
Under the ribs. So the monster fell dead, and it was so violent that Uyutang's cry, the ridge broke in two, and the earth quaked.
Man bats.
So there must have been. So there must have been like a major earthquake.
And then maybe there was like a sound that sounded like a cry, but it was probably just the earth breaking.
So probably like they experienced like a great flood and a great earthquake in like their history, right, as a peoples. And the old folks still say that one half of the ridge became the island of Negros. And the other half became Panay. So this talks about how Negros is an island literally to like
right
the southeast of the Panay island. And they used to be closer to each other, used to be one giant island. And this is the origin of the separation of Negros and Panay island.
Do you know that the seismologists are saying that a part of Africa is going to be beside this? So this is Africa, and then Madagascar is here, and this whole coast is slowly breaking off. And you can see earthquakes now of like just the earth opening up in the middle of highways, in the middle of.
I thought that we'd already stopped the expansion phase.
No,
it was
I think the consolidation
phase again.
No, I think we'll consolidate somewhere else. Mm. Do you remember when we were taking our princess bath?
Mm.
And all of
in Bali,
and all of the petals were flowing away from me and pooling into you. So that's it. I was the central continent before. And everything was flowing away from me, and you're going to be the new continent.
Yeah, and then it'll go back. Like, it's a cycle.
Maybe. I was like,
why
I'm
are you
a princess.
Sad about this?
I want to be a princess in the princess bath.
Okay, this is the last paragraph of the story.
Go.
So, dumalabdap tok lubay lubyok hanginon home. And his dad, Datu Paubari, gave a feast in honor of his three sons. So, he was very happy. Finally, all of my three sons have wives.
Several, in fact.
Yeah. And after the celebration, that's when they split up. And they left for different parts of the world. So, they say that Labo Dongon went northward. Humadapnon went southward. Dumalapdap went westward. And Datu Paubari remained in the east. And that's the story of the three brothers of Panay. And believe it or not, it's not as interesting as the other story of Humadapnon.
What was the other story?
We'll get to that later. But okay. I wanted to take like a natural pause because it's
1 hour in.
It's 1 hour in.
Nice. It's, you know, I'm seeing so many elements of Greek.
A lot of very familiar motifs.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
the being waylaid in an island.
We know that when we talked about it in our epics, in one of the earlier episodes of epics, we talked about, you know, the function and the motifs. And one of the common motifs is the big epic hero, obviously, a man, always. I haven't seen any epics about women, if there are
is,
any.
There is, apparently, diba? I think one of our, excuse me, one of our listeners left a message in our chat and said, like, oh, have you heard of this epic? It's actually the woman is the hero.
Okay, I'll take that back. So,
but it's rare, I think.
A lot of the epics are about men, and a lot of the motifs or the reasons for their hero's journey is either revenge, so a revenge plot. You killed my father, now I have to behead you and your entire village, aka Lamaang.
Or that other brother.
And or looking for wives. And honestly, a lot of them are just looking for wives in these epic stories, right?
Yeah. I mean, Hercules was... I mean, let's not over-romanticize also the Western... I wouldn't say over-romanticize. But like, a lot of the Western myths were also... You know, the Ramayana was the getting of a wife, the rescuing of the wife, and then like the bringing back the wife to like a nobility. Or is that Shakuntala?
And then Hercules was getting a wife, performing all of the labors to appease the gods, killing your wife and your daughter. Oh, sorry, the labors were after he killed his wife and daughter.
And then
in a fit of madness.
And then the Odyssey was about like leaving your wife and your kid to fight a battle.
So... a lot of really interesting motifs. So the journey, the enchanted island where you are
ensorcelled
by the wiles of like a lustful, magical, evil woman.
Mm-hmm.
There's also in the next story, there's an iconic image of the two cliffs that open and close.
Ooh.
So when you're sailing.
Ooh.
It's so cool. Because I think so here's what I think links a lot of them is because it sounds like they're a seafaring... No, they're not a seafaring culture.
But Panay is an island.
But there was a seafaring culture present, right?
There's probably a lot of trade. So that's also, you know... That...
I mean, to be fair, the reason that they're up there in the mountains is because they also... A lot of them retreated to the mountains eventually. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they didn't live like in the plains and, you know...
Yeah. Yeah.
Near the seas before. Mm-hmm. They were probably driven in. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. I like a lot of the descriptions of what are the hardest places to get a woman.
Exactly.
It's like it keeps on like leveling up. First it's like, well, first off, she's a daughter of the guy who created the earth. That's your mom. That's literally your mom. So your ambition to get a woman is like, I can get anyone because my dad got the daughter of the guy who made everything, right? So they sort of like...
And actually, they're like, I need to get someone who is at my level.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's their mindset.
Yeah, but also like, do you know who my mom is? Yeah. You know?
She's a goddess.
She's a goddess. My dad is the Datu who got the goddess. Mm. And it's like, my dad is the Datu who bested every other god who wanted to hook up with my mom. So of course they have, you know, if you think about like,
it's like your pride.
Exactly. They're so arrogant and so like entitled. But you know, if you think about where they're coming from, well, of course you're gonna go steal someone else's wife, or of course you're gonna steal like the Lord of the Underworld's daughter. Because it's like anybody else is going to be like, how do you bring that home to mom?
Yeah.
What if she's a tiger mom?
But I
like, no, crazy rich Asians.
What I appreciate about it is, you know, there's a very rich imagination.
Yeah.
To it, right? Like you can tell the creativity and like the depth of the lore that they really had.
Yeah.
Obviously we have something that's, you know, it's been recorded, but it's also been translated from an original language. So you lose some context there.
Yeah.
And then I'm reading the kind of concise version from the Outline of Philippine Mythology by Eflan de Hocano. That's obviously been greatly summarized. So you miss so much detail and so much of, you know, the context of what actions mean, who did what, etc.
Yeah.
And I realized that because in the telling of the second story, I actually read part of the original translated text, and I realized there's so much detail that has never made it to the summarized version.
Yeah.
So I will stop part one here.
Okay, we'll pause.
And in part two, we're going to share with you the adventures of Humadapnon. So this is
the
a different version. Yeah, the second brother. A different version of the story. I actually found the story very, very entertaining.
Okay.
There are a lot of elements to it that I didn't like agree as like a woman in modern society, but it also features Nagmalitong Yawa si Nagmaling Diwala, Diwata much, much more.
Okay, good.
And I will also talk about what else I've learned about Nagmalitong Yawa.
Yay!
Because she is interesting and she is like, I think, an interesting goddess in her own right to talk about. But that's part one. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. I know that some of our listeners are actually from the Panay Island.
Hello!
They were very excited when we talked about the epics. I know you guys have been waiting for this. We hope you enjoyed it. Let us know if you have any questions or suggestions or even any other details about the epic and the myths that we've missed or we don't know about. We'd love to learn. And see you in part two.
Yay!
But before that, Anamo, where can they find us?
You can find us at thegodsmustbecrazy.pod at Instagram, Facebook, and also you can listen on Spotify.com, on Anchor, on Apple Podcasts, but also we're now on Patreon. So go on Patreon, check us out. The links are in the description. But also, you can choose to be part of our Patreon community. And there are three tiers. It's shake, rattle, and roll. And, you know, follow us on Patreon for exclusive episodes, for advanced drops of our episodes.
We also share a bit more of behind-the-scenes updates.
Yeah.
Like a monthly newsletter just to let you know, what episodes we're looking into preparing, any other kind of books, interesting books or sources that we found, especially for you guys who are, you know, very interested in learning a bit more about the culture. If you sign up for, I think, the rattle
Shake.
And roll tiers, you also have access to Patron's Choice, which is basically an exclusive poll where you can help us decide future episodes down the line. So but again, you know, the best way to support us is obviously to just talk about it and share it with your friends, and that way a lot more people will discover about the podcast and about all the fun things we talk about. So until next time, guys.
Bye.